Welcome, it's Friday, and you're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness, brought to you by Darkness Radio. That's right, we've been around for almost 12 years now, Tim.
Really?
Can you believe it? Yeah, we're in the middle of our 12th year on air. We just celebrated our 11th anniversary.
Where does the time go?
It just keeps ticking and slipping into the future, my friend. But we've got a great show lined up for you today, and a brand new Theater of the Mind. It's a little bit close to home for me, Tim. Since Mother's Day was earlier this week, and we've got some interesting stories from our guest coming up, I've got a Theater of the Mind for my aunt. One of the first stories that really encouraged my interest in the paranormal. One of the first accounts I heard that really caught my attention. So we're going to do that here in a little bit on the show.
Okay.
We'll be back next week, all brand new shows. And I want to thank everybody that's been supporting the show. Please spread the word. Tell your friends, relatives, post about us on different boards, paranormal show, anything you can. Put it out there and let them know about the best in paranormal talk radio. That always goes a long way to help us out, and we really appreciate it. Today's episode brought to you by Amazon.com and brought to you by Audible.com. If you want to take advantage of the program they've got in place right now, check out audibletrial.com and /darkness, and you'll find the information there. And they've got over 180,000 titles. You can get a 30-day free trial and one free downloadable book to try it out. So go check that out. But let's get started with our topic today, Spirit Land, Tim. Avia Bell Moon, our guest today, and her email to me was so fascinating. She's written a book on the ghosts of California's Central Coast, and she has had present and ongoing paranormal experiences, almost too many to mention in an email form. She's had phone calls, text messages, messages left on her answering machine, EVPs, writing, letters written in steamy windows, and more. So we brought her on the show to talk about her book, The Ghosts of Central Coast California, and talk about her own experiences. Avia, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Have you had experiences your whole life, or was this something that only occurred later on in life?
They started occurring after I lived in Japan for over 16 years, mm-hmm. and it was interesting because when I was living there, I'm an author, and as you know, and I had written a book that had a paranormal element to it. Not the whole, you know, it wasn't the whole story, but there was a paranormal element to that book when I was living in Japan. And then, you know, when I returned from Japan in 2007 back to the U.S., returned to Santa Barbara, California, which was where I'm from originally, I just, you know, I rented a home with another roommate, and that's when they started in that house. As soon as I got back from Japan in 2007, that was when the paranormal experiences started. And ever since then, they've continued unabated, pretty much.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been interesting.
Idea of the paranormal in the United States as opposed to Japan, can you tell me what that cultural difference is like?
Actually, I didn't have any, like, paranormal experiences while living in Japan. I just written a book, and I just, you know, had a ghost element to it, and so I didn't, you know, actually have any experiences while living in Japan.
But the Japanese culture, how
do
they...
I don't know if I could compare, but... Mm-hmm.
Right, I was wondering
but,
more...
But, you know, Japanese culture believes in... they have a festival called the Obon Festival, which is where, they welcome back their relatives from the dead. And so there is that. It's sort of like Festival of the Dead in Mexican and Hispanic culture. And so... there is that element that's associated in there's that element in Japanese culture. A Festival of the Dead, it occurs in August when people welcome back their relatives from the dead. And so and there's a Japan has a lot of ghost stories, a lot of ghosts it's always been a part of their culture, ghost stories.
Did you read about them and research them while you lived there for all those years?
No, actually I didn't. No, I didn't. It just, it really, the intense paranormal experiences started when I returned back from Japan.
Okay. Well, let's start with that.
In 2007.
Okay, 2007. Mm-hmm. Walk me through that. When did they begin, and how did it happen and unfold for you?
I had just moved into a house, and it was shortly afterwards. Just little strange things started happening. For example, I would be, talking on the phone, and then the line would suddenly go dead. And, I thought that was a bit odd, and so phone keeps ringing, and then I went downstairs to check the box, and the line had been disconnected. And so I thought that was strange. I don't know, and we didn't, because there was a lock on the box. And so I just said it ended at that. I thought, well, that's pretty strange. And then I just sort of left it. And then it really, took off when I, experiences took off when I woke up one night and I was, there was a sunroom next to my room and the light had been turned on in that room. And I thought that was very strange because, I certainly hadn't turned it on and my roommate had not turned it on. And so these questions, began to, unanswered questions.
Did you start to jump to the conclusion that it might be paranormal, or were you just thinking, it might be a loose wire
connection? Well, at that time it was interesting because a paranormal, I've forgotten the name of the show now. It's not Paranormal Activity. Is it Paranormal Nation? It was debuted in 2007. I forgot the name of the show. It was on, I've forgotten now the name of the network it was on. I forgot the name of the show. It had just debuted. And so that's when I began watching that show, and then I began, thinking, being open to the possibility that there were, actually something, paranormal activity occurring in this house. And then at that time, it was all sort of meant to be because there was a woman living next to me who was a psychic. And I told her, I said, some strange things have been happening in this house. And I just moved in and we were new neighbors. And she said, that's when it all came together with her. Actually, she said, I've seen the spirit of a little boy out on your veranda. I've seen him standing out there a few times. And she described him. And it was interesting because I had this vision of this vision. I remember the night that the light went on in the house, in the room next to me, that I had kind of a, I don't have this face. I had seen a face of a child that looked like he was dead, like he had been hung or something. His neck was sort of, tilted, and it was scary. And then she said, "I've seen this boy of spirit out on your veranda a few times, just looking out." And so then I thought, okay. And it was the A&E Network, Paranormal something. Do you know the show?
Paranormal States.
Yes. That's what it was. And so I began watching that every week, and then I began going to realize, there's something going on here, and there's, there could be a child here. And so what happened is that it became, kind of scary, and I wasn't able to sleep at night, and I remember walking around one day, around 5 p.m., and I at that time I had called the paranormal investigators in close to Los Angeles, and they were very, very helpful, and they said, don't worry about it. They said, 90% of the time, they're going to hurt you. They just, need to connect with you. And so I was sort of, and she said, you should just talk to them. And so that night after I'd spoken to her, I did. I just, walked around the house. I was alone, and I just, really spoke to them heart to heart, and I said, if you need any help, or I don't know what you want from me, but I'm here for you in a very sincere way. And that night at around 1 a.m. was... I was sleeping, and all of a sudden, something woke me up out of the blue, and I heard this, I can't explain, it's not human voice, just, it was not human, but it wasn't malicious at all. It was kind of sing-songy, sort of like you see in the movies, I can't explain it. It just woke me up out of the blue. I heard it above me, I've never heard anything like that before, and I knew it was that person responding back to me. And that scared me, because not because it was malicious at all, not at all, but because I just had no idea what I knew what it was. I knew it was them responding back to me, but I didn't, I was just terrified, and I didn't sleep at all that night. And so the next night I went to my friend's house next door, and I said, hey, this activity is getting really, you know, more intense. And she said, well, you can stay here a few nights. And it does make a difference because when I stayed at her house, the next morning I woke up and the clock had been, you know, set back an hour. And so I was kind of late for work and kind of prankish. It was in the beginning, it was a prankish, like a child. It was pranks. They were playing, he was playing little pranks on me, you know, like a child would do. And so, I just said, okay, I have to deal with this. And so, I had the psychic came over and we started to piece together what had happened. And she was the one who really put the, you know, everything together, because she was able to, you know, figure out that a crime had occurred in that house. The boy had been, had been abused sexually abused. And so I think, and I'm pretty sure, I'm 100% sure what happened is that, you know, he stayed in that house and was sort of stuck in this emotional, you know how with spirits and ghosts are, they're stuck in this emotional trap there. And so he waited for someone to come along so that someone could hear his story or, you know, what had happened. He wasn't able to move on because just stuck in this emotional kind of, you know, trap. And so, it was meant to be, because, you know, there was this, we had our roles to play, me as a researcher and author, and then my friend who was a psychic. And there's more later when I'll go on to that. But all came together to help this child, you know, be released from whatever crime he had occurred. And it came, and it happened. What occurred is that she put together what she had, you know, was able to see, and she was able to communicate actually with this spirit. And revealed that he had been sexually abused, and we think murdered. And that the crime had been a whole cold cover up, and you know, from a very rich, you know, person living in that area, and I can't really say the name, but it's interesting because my roommate who at the time was also part of this, you know, she didn't want anything to do with it. She was just terrified of the whole stuff and the whole thing, but she had actually lived on the street where this person had. What do we think had happened is that he killed, you know, murdered the boy, you know, sexually abused him, and then murdered him to cover the crime up, and then moved to this very exclusive part of Santa Barbara, and then, you know, we think he was buried somehow in the foundation of the house, and so, you know, just covered up the whole crime, and then it was interesting because she actually had lived on the house in the street where this person had moved to. So none of this is coincidence, you know. It's like almost like the universe brought us together to help this child. And it's really, really, and after that, you know, we had an investigation. I had the investigators come over, and it was really interesting, not coincident, again, because one of the investigators was a police officer. And so here it was, you know, her friend is a psychic, could put together that revealed the fact that it occurred in the 1940s. And so all this time, this child had been waiting and waiting, you know, for someone to come and hear his story and release him. And I think that's what happened. And it's all in the book, but I spent 6 hours in the Santa Barbara Public Library researching the history of that house. And it's interesting because, you know, I didn't tell my friend who was a psychic that what I found, that, you know, the person was a contractor and the name and everything, but she was the person who, she said, yeah, I mean, I asked her, I didn't say anything about that, but she told me. She said that, yes, he was a contractor.
So you were able to get validation both from a medium and from historical reference points.
Yeah, and so the medium, what she said, and I'm a very good researcher, you know, I spent 6 hours in the library, you know, and everything concurred, you know. And when I really, really was very thorough with the research, and you know, I could see the dates and when it happened and the name of this, you know, and it, even the name of, you know, she got the name of the child, and he responded to that, and it was just it was very, very fascinating. It was so fascinating, and just little things like my roommate was really against it and really wanted nothing to do with it. And she said, I don't believe in this. I don't believe in whatever you're saying. And she was very kind of so you know, a defense against fear that she was feeling. And she said, I don't know. She goes, she should prove that he's here. If he's here, prove it. And that, and then I was in the room talking to her. And then suddenly I heard a click, and the light had gone on in my other room just when we were talking about that, as if the child was there saying, yes, I'm here. You know, little things like that started happening after that. And so this child was very, very cooperative. you know, and just wanting to move on. And that's what I've found out with the paranormal. They're just stuck in this. These ghosts are just emotional traces, you know, that just want to someone to hear them. Of course, not all of them. Of course, there's all different types. You know, of course, you know, there's entities and other, you know, very malicious kinds as well. But this one was not like that at all. This was just a very child who wanted to know what had happened. And so we were all sort of brought together, three women, you know, to just, you know, put together the pieces and resolve this crime that had occurred. And it's no coincidence that one of the investigators actually, in a day job, was a policeman, armed law enforcement. So they came over, they did the investigation for about a month after all this started occurring, and they did a full report, very, very thorough. They were very nice, and we heard, like, just that at that time, I think that person was there, the one who had committed the crime. He was there, because we heard, we picked up EVPs by the fireplace, and, you know, and just different EVPs, and I have everything still.
What did the spirit overall tell you? Were you able to help the spirit cross over?
I think so, because after that after we had the investigation, things started to calm down, and it just sort of resolved. So it had a beginning, and then the intense period, and then it actually resolved. He just wanted someone to know what had happened, and that's it makes sense, doesn't it? When you have people of power that are committing crimes and, they're able to do whatever they want, and there's all the corruption, I think, in the 1940s, there is now as well, but, with the police officers and wealthy members of the community and so I was happy to do that. In the beginning it was terrifying, but I was happy to help this little boy move on, and,
Did he give you any insight? Yeah, did he give you any insight on why he was murdered and why all that occurred?
I think that the boy was molested,
okay,
sexually abused. And so, because there were, it's all in the book, but my friend who's a medium was saying there was an attic or something there in the house where there were pictures. She could see, like, pictures of boys that had, boys that, or, that, had, and they, maybe he was kept up there and, And so it was just a whole picture of a molestation. Oh, and it's interesting because this is interesting because a few years later, was it a year later, when my book was about to come out, that's when activity started occurring again in her house. It was almost as if this selfish person, this person who had done that, molested this child, and maybe perhaps I think murdered him as well, was so worried about his name that at that time activity started occurring in her house. Again, he was, he didn't want this news to come out, and so he started, at that time, there were all sorts of activities started occurring in her house when the book was supposed to come out. And so she was, actually communicating with him and telling him, trying to negotiate and just, anyways, it's all in the book, but basically it's very, very clear, very, very clear that there was a person there who lived in a very rich, wealthy family,
mm-hmm.
a very wealthy family that had a name to protect. And they cared, as most,
right.
As most molesters, abusers do. They could, it's all about them and their ego, and it's pure evil, that they just want to protect their name. And so I think she kind of, said that your name will be protected, and because she was going through so much. I mean, the dishes were rattling, and she was, things were being stolen from her, misappropriate, she couldn't find stuff in her room, and all kinds of stuff was happening. It was too much for her. And so, and then it was interesting as the story continued, is that that next door they were also having problems with girls that had been having experiences, teenage girls. So it was like the whole neighborhood had been affected by this entity. I don't know if you're this entity, but this spirit, molested the whole neighborhood pretty much. Other homes, because I had spoken to other homes that, in their neighborhood, and they said, we have been having experience as well with girls. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the story of that neighborhood. And he may still be there, I don't know where he is now, but he did a lot of damage there. And it came for a very rich family in that area. That's a very rich area.
And you said your third partner was a police officer. What did they make of the situation?
The police officer, well, they went on evidence, you know, and the evidence they had were the EVPs. And so, you know, I mean, it's not so cut and clear, as you know, the paranormal.
Right.
And so the evidence we had was, you know, were the EVPs mainly, and there was an EVP where one boy, they caught one EVP that was by the fireplace that was saying, "I love this, I love it, I love it." You know how someone says, "I love it," in a very kind of, you know, and that kind of fits his character, you know, this character of the person who had done it. He was actually enjoying the investigation. We have that as an EVP. We had other EVPs where people had voiced "get out." They didn't want, you know, the medium to find out more, and so very hostile.
Let's start to talk about some of your other experiences. I mean, that was fascinating. But you believe you've received phone calls from the dead?
You know, and so after that, I moved into another home. After that, I think my roommate was sort of upset about the whole thing, and so actually I moved out of that home after this whole investigation, and so you know, Santa Barbara is a very expensive area, and so I moved into another house, which, well, you know, of course, as you know, was totally haunted as well. That home has just a totally different story. That home was built in the 1800s, a Victorian home, and very, you know, nice home, and had a garden, and was inhabited by you know, health and wellness person, and also had been known historically, you know, been inhabited by writers, and I'm a writer as well, and so it was natural that I would be attracted to that kind of home. You know, there's just very charming places, but and again, you know, I didn't think that anything would happen. I just about a month later after I moved in, then I remember waking up one night and you know, I've seen I don't know, smoke, or the, you know, sort of, it's not orbs, but the kind of ghostly kind of image, not where you can see actually the whole image of the person, but, you know, just sort of a misty kind of ghostly sort of image. And so, and then when I saw that, I said, oh, there's something here as well. And then as it turned out, after that, that was also pretty stressful, because that ghost was pretty, this was very, very, very intense, because not a malicious way, as again, but it was almost the same thing where, you know, I was very, you know, talking to them and just saying, look, I know you're here, just, and in retrospect, maybe you shouldn't really communicate with them, because the more you do, then the more they want to, you know, get involved with you. And I remember taking out my camera at night, you know, and wanting to get maybe a picture of this, and then using the flash. And then after that, I remember that seeing flashes in return. In the whole room, like was not the whole room, but sort of like, you know, was lit up in a kind of a, not lit, no, that's not the right words. I could see flashes of light, like, and they were responding back to me. I was using a flash camera, but I could see flashes of light. And so then it was confirmed, all right, well, now I know that something's here now. And so, and that became, I don't know if you want to call it our relationship. And so after that, it's just too numerous to think, but I'll tell you exactly what happened is that I was so, so stressed out because I couldn't sleep. You know, the insomnia was really bad, and I could not sleep. And I said, I've had enough of this, you know. I need to sleep, and you need to stop bothering me, telling this to the spirit. And then I threatened to call the police. And so that day, the next morning, I was on the phone call with someone and back up north. Okay, I said, well, that's strange. And then I began to think, oh, maybe they don't want me to call the police. And so that happened twice that day. And then what happened that evening, I was on the phone, and this was just really kind of scary. I was on the phone talking to someone when the EVP came on the voice, on the phone line. An EVP, like they're trying to stop me from calling the police. You know, it was a live EVP. It wasn't
right.
on the recorder. You know, when you
yeah,
record
we call
and
that,
then you play back and then.
Yeah, we call that
right
DVP, direct voice phenomena. What did the voice say?
Mm-hmm. I couldn't. It was just scratchy. You know how you can't. I mean, sometimes you can pick up what they're saying. Sometimes you can't. It was just sort of like
yeah,
scratchy
I understand
sort
that.
Of. But I could tell it was an EVP. they were trying to stop me from calling the police. They were so worried about that. Again, you see what I mean? It's these emotional, the same with this other spirit, you know, they're so just balls of emotion, traces of emotional traces.
What would a ghost care if you call the police? Avia, why would the ghost?
I'm sorry, what?
Why would the ghost care if you call the police? It's not like they're going to show up and arrest the ghost. The ghost, you know, is perfectly safe.
Well, that's what I mean. That they don't have intellectual capacity, and so Richard, who's famous in this area, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's a kind of famous kind of ghost hunter here. Lives in Ventura. He helped me. Very nice man.
Who is that? I'm sorry,
he's
cut out.
He's the person who really. Richard Sennett.
Oh, sure.
Do you know him?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, very. He's known quite a lot of experience. He's the one who kind of explained to me the emotional traces, and what he said concurs with what I've experienced. Of course, you know, intellectually, we know that, but they have no intellect. They're not capable of intellect. It's all emotion. And so all they think was all their, and they get in this emotional sort of, you know, loop like, they're going to call the police, they're going to call the police, they're going to call the police, and so they have to stop it, and they do, that's why the EVP came on the line that night. That was a little bit scary.
Now,
and
you've
I was
had,
really upset about that.
You've had messages left on your answering machine as well?
Oh yeah, just a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So the way that works is that when I was living in the first home in Santa Barbara, the one that was haunted by the little boy, my sister had called. And she left a message and, you know, had said, whatever, we're going to do lunch or something and then say, talk to you later, hung up the phone. And then I could hear this kind of scratching and I thought, oh, maybe she left her cell phone in her purse and it was still on. And this was when the paranormal activity was pretty intense with a little boy and all this. It was right in the middle of this investigation. And then I could hear someone and I thought, oh, no, it's an EVP. So what they had left the EVP on the answering her message. And they had said, and that one I could figure it out. I recorded it was good. That one, they were saying goodbye and her name. So that one was very clear. Goodbye and her name. That's what they said. She said goodbye, and then they said goodbye in her name. And that was right on the left. Whoa. On the message. That's happened. That happened then. That happened a few weeks ago because I've got some spirits here now as well. And anyways, they left a message a few weeks ago. Not a message, but, you know, it's another same thing. Someone had called, and then afterwards you hear the EVP. And that one, they were just saying hi.
They were just trying to get your attention.
That's happened. I guess so. And they're here now. And so it's come to the point where I just, you know, I cohabit with them.
All right.
You know, it's not even, or it's past investigation. I know they're here. I know that, you know, and just, you know, just you keep your boundaries and I keep my boundaries and we'll just be fine, I guess.
Well, we need to take a break, and then we'll talk about the ghosts of California's Central Coast, the many locations and stories that our guest, Avia Bell Moon, has shared. Right now, though, we're going to go deep into the dark hives of Darkness Dave himself. This is one of the stories that was originally told to me by my aunt and my mother about a paranormal experience in our family and what opened us up to the world that we now know and beyond the darkness. This is brought to you by Audible.com. This is Theater of the Mind. Theater of the Mind, The Call, a true life tale from Judy Schrader and Beyond the Darkness, Dave Schrader. I was 19 years old when my mom passed away. We had the typical mother-daughter relationship during my teen years. We had fights over stupid things like clothing and what time I should come home from my evening escapades. This was long before cell phones, but she always asked me to call when I arrived at my destination to let her know I was safe. Then, before that call was ended, she would ask me to call her to let her know I was on my way home. Typical mom, always worried, but I tried my best to comply with that request. It was July of 1970, and my mom had taken a trip with two of her girlfriends from high school, and when she returned, she developed a blood clot in her leg. She was admitted to the hospital Wednesday evening, and by Friday she was gone. Things flew by that weekend, making arrangements for visitation and burial, buying food and beverages for family arriving from out of town. I was in a daze. It was the weekend after her funeral, or shortly thereafter, that our foray into the paranormal would begin. My nephew Dave came to spend the night at our house. He was nearly 3 years old, and we had always had great fun when he was there. He had been very close to his grandmother, but being so young was not really aware of what her death meant. It was easier for Terry and Jimmy, Dave's parents, to leave him overnight and pick him up the next morning.
when they would go out for the evening. Dave slept in his grandmother's room for the night. Although my parents were still married at the time of my mother's death, my father snored like a chainsaw cutting through a scrap metal pile, so they often slept in separate rooms. The next morning, when Terry came to pick him up, Dave told her that his grandma had come to see him. She had sat on the side of the bed, told him a story, and before leaving, told him to be a good boy and that she loved him. Needless to say, Terry got freaked out by this revelation, but assumed that her little boy had simply dreamt the entire thing. Then, Dave shared a very stunning piece of information with his mom. He told her that Grandma was wearing a brown and white striped dress, and that she didn't have all of her teeth. Now, this is an important aspect of the experience because we had a closed coffin ceremony, and no one except for the mortician, my father, and myself knew what dress she had been buried in, or the fact they had removed her false teeth for burial. This, as you could imagine, was quite a bit of interesting news to hear from a little boy. Terry promptly said with a nervous, wavering voice,
"If you're here now, Mom, I love you, but I don't want to see you."
She then came out of the bedroom and told me what my nephew had just shared. That is when I informed her about the dress and the false teeth. We were both equally freaked out by Dave's comments. This was long before we had gotten into the paranormal. A few weeks later, I was sound asleep in my bed, and my phone, not an extension, but a separate line from my parents' house phone, started ringing at about 2:30 a.m. I sat up groggily, and I answered the phone. The phone lightly crackled and popped. Then, clear as could be, I heard a voice address me. A familiar but impossible voice. It was my mom.
"I just wanted to call to let you know I'm doing fine. I'm safe. Please don't worry about me."
Then she said something that I found very strange. She said,
"I can never call again if you tell anyone about this."
That was when the full realization of what was going on dawned on me. My dead mom was calling me on the phone. I started screaming. My dad, a former sergeant in the army and paratrooper from World War II, leapt from bed and charged through the house to come to my aid. He burst through my bedroom door, ready to take on any would-be intruders that may have just found their way into the wrong house. He was not prepared for what he found. I was shaking and astonished and pointed toward the receiver for the phone, and I told him,
"Mom just called me."
Dad grabbed the phone and the line was dead. No noise, no dial tone. He grumbled at me.
"Jesus Christ, it was just a dream. Go back to sleep."
The phone had not been hung up yet, so I picked it up to listen. The lack of noise was different to me. I can't explain the sound or lack of it. But it wasn't just a lack of being hung up sound. I felt my mom was still on the line, but couldn't talk because I had told my dad. Mom, true to her ways, had done what she always expected of me. She called to let me know she got home safe. She was well, and everything would be okay. She never called me again on my phone, but she came to me in a dream a few weeks after the phone call. She said she couldn't call me, but she would stay in touch, and she has, in my dreams. This whole experience is what began my desire to know more about what lies beyond.
Beyond the Darkness.
We're back today. Avia Bell Moon, our guest, her book, Spirit Land, The Ghosts of California's Central Coast. Let's start talking about some of your favorite haunts that you cover in the book, Avia. Where would you like to begin our journey?
Just before before that, I just had a real quick question to ask you, and maybe your listeners know about this. Just recently, I had a paranormal experience where, what it means when, this happens so many times I can't even count, in the midst of all these paranormal experiences, when you look at the clock and the numbers are lined up, for example, it's always, when I have a paranormal experience in the dead of night, it's always going to, like, when I look at the clock, almost I don't even know what it's going to say. The numbers align where it says 111 or 333. That's happened so many times I can't even tell you. Or 222. A few weeks ago, I mean, my cat was just screaming. I mean, just, and it was terrifying because I'd never made that sound before. And I looked at the clock and the clock said 333 and I know something was there. You know, and so sure. Just wondering, do you know what that means at
all?
Well,
there's a book by Marie D. Jones and Larry Flaxman called 1111, The Time Prompt Phenomena, that goes into a lot of the possibilities of this. Now, the supernatural aspect, which I know a lot of people buy into, is the fact that you're noticing it at these specific times, the spirits are trying to get your attention. There's also something called a mnemonic trigger, and that is that you look at things and notice things that are pattern. You probably looked at the clock four other times but didn't pay attention when it was only 2:27 or when it was 1:45. But you just happen to glance and 333 is going to stand out to you. 111 is going to stand out to you. My birthday, 11:22, I always notice that. Happens twice a day and I almost notice it every day. Does that mean there's a special message in it for me? Or my mind is trained and I notice this pattern. It's really hard to say whether it's really paranormal or not. Now, you have an intriguing aspect that something seems to happen at that time and you're able to corroborate the paranormal experience with the time. So I would start to notice what's going on with that pattern and you know, what happens at those different points.
Yeah, I just noticed that several times that's occurred. And just one more experience I wanted to share with you. When I've actually felt hand on my when I'm sleeping, I can feel their hand on my arms. I can feel that, and this is just the weirdest thing because, anyways, it's, I know we're limited in time here, but it's like it doesn't feel like it's alive. It doesn't feel like it's dead. You know,
it just feels like a pressure,
dead, right?
Right.
When you touch something alive, it's warm. It's in between that, and so that's what I mean. There's this transitional state, you know, between life and death. I think that, you know, that way I don't know what you have to say about that, but it's like not cold and clammy. You know, when you touch something,
right.
You know, it's dead. It wasn't dead. But it felt like it was, you know, half. You know, anyways, that's occurred to me. That's happened a few times, and so that's why I'd be very, you know, set boundaries here.
Do these experiences
deal with now, actually?
Right. Do these experiences unnerve you? Do they frighten you, or are you? Is it just matter of fact to you at this point?
Yes, it's still unnerving to me because it is frightening, you know, because upsetting to me, and more upsetting more than anything because, you know, I have to function here. And I have to, you know, work and get sleep, and so it's unnerving, you know, when you feel these, you know, hands on you, and yeah, it's kind of scary.
But they never do. It's not like they're trying to shove you down a flight of stairs. Yeah, they're not like trying to shove you down. They're not trying to shove you down a flight of stairs. They're not screaming your name or threatening your life. Why are you still unnerved by these things?
Well, I mean, you know, it's just, I mean, if you were asleep at night in your bed and you felt, you know, clammy hands on you, and wouldn't that kind of be, you know, upsetting to you? You know, it's just.
Sure.
It's
do
just
do
upsetting.
You reach out to try to find out what they want?
I thought I could do an investigation. I know what they want. They're lonely. You know, most of the ghosts, they're just lonely. They want someone, you know, they're lonely. You know, and they're just, I don't, at this point, I don't have the capacity really to do another investigation or whatever. I just think that they're lonely and they're just, they just want someone, you know, to be with. And so it seems like they're, I've just had to set boundaries and just let them know that that's not inappropriate. So as I would do it if it were, you know, in a person who were, you know, alive. It's just it's come to the point where there's no, you know, there's just because they happen to be living in this transitional state. I treat them the same way I would treat any, you know, living being. So that's the way I have to deal with it.
Right, and that's the best way to handle it. Let's talk about your book, Spirit Land, The Ghosts of California's Central Coast.
Sorry.
Uh-huh. No need to apologize. Fascinating to hear your own personal experiences. But let's delve into what is one of your favorite locations that you cover in the book?
Oh, a favorite? Let's see. There are quite a few locations. I don't know if I have a really specific favorite. I did enjoy all of them. I suppose Santa Maria Inn is kind of interesting. That's where I'm, Santa Maria Inn is at an inn here that has quite a history. It's of paranormal activity. It's been around for a few hundred years. I believe that the Ten Commandments, they filmed the Ten Commandments here, and so it's been, this area has been a kind of a filming grounds for, you know, for Hollywood. They've come and filmed different, productions here, and so they've stayed in the Santa Maria Inn, and so it has quite a history there, and that place has had quite a lot of paranormal activity.
All right, well, what kind of history do we have? Was there a lot of death or suicide associated with that location?
I don't know about that. I don't know. I don't. It's just history, you know. History has, it just has a lot of history, and so I don't know if there's been. I can't remember any stories of suicide or death. Actually, they just had, people that the workers there that have, like, for one story where they were down in the wine cellar. I'm just looking at it now. And the bottles started coming out of well, let's see what happened here. Let's see, 12 bottles came off onto the floor and ruined the rug that was there. I don't know. They left and they came back and the bottles of wine were on the floor. So they had that kind of, those issues there in the wine cellar. They have had, cameras pick up the ghosts, because of course they have cameras there.
Mm-hmm.
So they've had some images there.
Now, do you go out and investigate these places? Do you go vet them out yourself, or are these kind of collections of other people's stories and experiences?
And for the book itself, I just interviewed people that had experiences. Yes, that for the book, it was just I went to each location, and then I interviewed people of the experiences they had had. It's interesting because I don't know if, did you look at the book itself, the cover?
Yes.
So do you know what that cover looks like? Do you know what the cover is?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, actually, it's a NASA. It's a NASA aerial photo, I guess.
Okay.
And I looked at that and I thought, this is perfect because it looks sort of ghostly. But actually, what it is that it's, well, anyways, if you look at it, it looks like sort of a kind of like a supernatural sort of creature and with claws reaching out to the Central Coast.
Right.
And then you can see the little red spots. That's where fires occurred. So actually what it is, it's a NASA aerial photo of the fires that occurred.
Oh, wow.
But if you look at it another way, it looks, yeah.
Well, let's...
It looks very, very kind of...
Let's talk about some of the other places. What about Summerland? What can you tell us about that?
So Summerland, there is a house there called the Big. There is a called the Big Yellow House, and so Summerland is an interesting place because this is the home of the spiritualists. And let me look here. The 1880s, there was a spiritualist community there of mediums. Okay. And so, so there's a spiritualist church at the moment, right now, in Summerland. And this goes back to the whole history of this area. This used to be a kind of, if you will, like a training ground for mediums and mediums. So it's fascinating because people from all over the U.S. would go and stay there. It's a beautiful, beautiful area, and they would just, that was a time when, training of mediums and speaking to spirits was just commonplace. It was actually kind of an area that had a lot of oil as well. And so, this person, I believe his name was Mr. Williams, would come to, came to Spiritland, to Summerland and, established this colony of mediums. And so ever since then, it's been a very, very spiritual place. And so that I can give you the exact date here. It's been a while since I've been there, but let me see here. Just looking in the book here.
So is this kind of like Lilydale in New York?
I'm sorry, what?
Is this similar to Lilydale in New York? Kind of the spiritualist encampment?
I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, it's like an area where the mediums and psychics and spiritual community all come together, and it's, they live there. It's a very powerful location.
Okay, all right. It looks like, yeah, I'm not familiar with that area, but it looks like an 1892. Here's a letter, an excerpt from the letter written by the Summerland founder. Okay, so Summerland, it was founded by H.O. Williams, who was a spiritualist. And a letter he wrote on September 24th, 1892, quote is, to make Summerland what is intended by the spirit world, to be a beacon light for the world and to serve the undoubted and immense mineral researches of the Ortega Rancho for the benefit and to aid the promulgation of the truths of spiritualism, to build homes for worn-out mediums, etc., to, in the most practical way, for the higher classes of mediumship. And so this area then has that history, Summerland does. And so, you know, this Mr. Williams came and founded this area, founded the Spirit of Summerland spiritualist community there, and it exists until now. If you go there, there's in Santa Barbara, there's a church, a spiritualist church, where you can go and, you know, talk to the people in the right. On the other side if you want. That's what they promote. So I've been there once, and I honestly preferred my neighbor, my next door neighbor is just really really brilliant.
Well, talk to me about Hector. Talk to me about Hector, the young boy who inhabits the big yellow house.
Right. So let's see here. You know, this was just told to me, but it's been a while since I've been there. But so there was someone there who managed the wine cellar. And, you know, again, there was a child there. And so he had the energy of someone who, you know, also would play pranks. And so at that time that, you know, it was sort of similar to what I experienced in that, you know, was not malicious at all. But again, he would experience them, the boy turning the light off and on, you know, kind of a lot of playing there. And in that yellow house, I know that this person, Rod Latham, he had seen actually dinner parties or something where he could actually see, you know, a lot of times people have driven by. It's a very famous, you know, landmark in this area in Summerland. And people would drive by and they'd see lights and activity on. You know, like it's still people are enjoying their, you know, their parties and their celebrations there, and still see activity in that house, even though it's now shut down. And so it's, you know, activity is still occurring there, because a lot of times people will be driving on the freeway and they'll see, you know, lights on in the restaurant. But, you know, it's already closed down. So,
Well, that definitely makes you wonder.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah. There's
What attracts you to these certain locations to write about? What specifically stands out?
I just wanted to. After I had sort of my own experience, I became interested in this whole area. And you know, if you read the book, it starts out talking about how there's an Indian connection. Well, anyways, there's an Indian connection. There's an Indian connection, element of this book. So the Chumash Indians were the first inhabitants of this area, of this whole, you know, this whole Central Coast, and they believed that this area was a called Shimilaksha, which means there's a name they gave it. The name they gave to this land where, or North America, actually, they called it Shimilaksha, which means that this area of Point Sal is where Point Sal, the area where ghosts would depart from North America. So they believe that ghosts would enter on the East Coast and they depart on the West Coast, and this is the area where they would depart. I'm sorry. I must quote, not Point South, Point Conception, which is located close to Lompoc. And so that's why I interviewed quite a few of the Chumash. And, you know, you asked me about what attracted me to this area, but it's what's interesting to know is that this is the area of the California missions. And in the California missions, there was a lot of disharmony. You know, we look at them now, and I don't know if you've ever been to any of the California missions, but that's where a lot of, you know, heartache occurred, because you have the Spanish come over colonizing and shoving down their culture, frankly, you know, down to the throats of the Indians who didn't want it, basically, and they were colonized. And so then when you go to these missions, a lot of them are haunted, you know, especially in Lompoc. The mission in Lompoc is very haunted. They've had stories and people have related stories where they've heard the chanting still of the Indians, and they've heard the monks, you know, just again, caught in this emotional sort of, you know, stuck in this emotional loop where they're guilty. You know, they feel guilty for what they've done. And so, and other times they've had stories of they've seen greyhounds, you know, the ghost of dogs. They've seen the ghost of horses. That's been caught on camera many times, I believe. Ghost of cameras. They've done paranormal investigations out there where they've had caught, images of the spirits. The horses and Indians on the horses. They've caught a few images of that.
When you talk to these native cultures, and you were discussing this with them, do they have ways of handling these hauntings? Do they try to get their relatives and descendants to move on, or do they just let them coexist like a multi-layered parallel universe just all happening at once?
I think that probably, it seems like there's no set answers. You know, this happens and this happens and cause and effect, and then, you know, we can resolve. There's more questions than answers. In my experience in the paranormal, there are more questions. I think that what you just said is probably the best, you know, way of describing it. There's just, you know, we're cohabiting with these spirits that are in that transitional phase, and the emotions run deep. In fact, they go way beyond death. You know, they go way beyond death. Death is just, that is easy compared to resolving one's emotions. That's what I'm kind of picking up in that with a little boy, and then with these Indians, you know, or the monks that came over and colonized, and they thought they were doing a great thing, and then no, they didn't do a great thing, and then all this, you know, disease occurred, and murders and molestation again, of rapes of children. That's really what occurred in the missions. Honestly, and now that's being processed, and it doesn't end with death. You know, the emotions are stronger than death. Actually, that's what I've come to realize.
What are some of the more frightening?
Like you just said, there's interdimensional sort of cohabiting here that's going on.
What are some of the more frightening locations that you included in the book, and what made them so frightening?
Frightening. The things that I experienced or the people that
you cover them in your book. You go to these locations and you talk to people that have had experiences. Are there any that are more frightening than others?
Not that I can recall, actually. I don't remember any of them being really frightened. They just were maybe the people that interviewed. I don't remember the people being, you know, that frightened by what had occurred.
Sure. All right. Well, I can't thank you enough,
really,
Avia. Yeah, thank you for spending some time with us tonight and sharing your stories. It's been a pleasure, and I hope all goes well for you and the book sales do well.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Same to your state radio station.
We appreciate that. I'm always open to the ideas, Tim, when people send us guest ideas.
Uh-huh.
And when people write in and tell us, I want to be a guest on your show. And I always ask, well, what do you have to share with us? And this woman had so many different stories to share. And I don't know if she just, we're talking two different languages. She just did not seem to want to come along on this journey with us, my friend.
I don't know. Yeah.
That made it a little harder. She still had some great stories in there.
Yeah.
But when I ask you which ones are the most frightening, what do you mean by frightening? Well, scary, terrifying, bone chilling, any of these locations. And she has to refer to her book in order to answer my questions. We wish her a lot of success, and I hope she does well with it. It's just not conducive. We did the theater of the mind about my own family's experiences with the paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
And looking back on this journey now, Tim, as we're, into our 12th year of broadcasting,
mm-hmm.
Our new year with Beyond the Darkness.
Yep.
But the 11 previous years with Darkness Radio Direct, it's just funny to me how many people have had similar experiences, similar life altering moments with the paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have some, like the time prompt phenomena. To me, is not something I'm very, I am well versed in it. I understand how people have these experiences, but I'm not of the mind to me that is a real paranormal moment. Where do you stand on that?
I tend to be more in your camp with the time prompt phenomenon.
Well, you know, we've talked about other things too. When people are getting messages and
yeah.
a song comes on the radio, or they see a license plate that says something, I have such a hard time because it's not like they manifested a license plate.
It's funny when she mentioned the 3:33 thing. A
right.
lot of people tend to think 3:33 a.m. and they automatically go to the demonic because supposedly at 3:33 a.m. you know, supposedly Christ was crucified at 3:33 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
and it is an affront by the devil that at 3:33 a.m. it is the devil's way of telling you, or Satan's way of telling you, that it's kind of him thumbing his nose at Christians.
Right, he's
everywhere.
Mocking the Christian faith, yeah.
Right. So automatically when she says her cat is screaming at 3:33 a.m., I'm sitting here in the background going, it's Satan. but that's just me being a smartass. But in that retrospect, you know, I hear people saying, well, all ones are angels and all sevens are this and all sixes are that, and in my head, I'm playing dollar poker and going, no, you just got a great hand.
Right.
You know, I
yeah, some of those signs are just, they're too far out there. And I guess that's what's more fascinating to people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, could it be that this is something I would maybe buy more into? Like mm-hmm. you're thinking of mom
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden you look at a license plate, pulls in front of you. And at that moment it says, miss you too. M-I-S, the letter U and mm-hmm. the number two.
Yeah.
Now, do I believe that I put out a call to the universe and the universe went about making this person get in the car at this exact time, getting on the road and knowing that I was going to make this request before I even made it? Or was this just something around and the spirit of my mom tapped me on the shoulder and kind of drew my attention to something? And at that moment I noticed it. That I might be more willing to believe, like,
yeah.
you know, opportunist yeah. spirits where they're like, hey, oh, this is a song Dave and I loved when I was alive.
Mm-hmm.
And then she kind of thumps me and all of a sudden I hear the song. Yeah. You know, I believe maybe more of that than I believe that, you know, my mom's whispering in the ear of, you know, a DJ, you gotta play Blurred Lines.
Right. Yeah.
Play Blurred Lines. Right. Which would be weird because I was listening to a country station, but, you know, to me that might be more along the lines of what's going on. I just, signs have me confounded and confused. And I know, you know, I've thought about, well, maybe we should do a full episode more on that. And we've done it in bits and pieces mm-hmm. where we've talked about time prompt phenomena and other signs. I just am not you know, and I've been telling you, I've been looking for signs from my mom.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things that pop up that are very intriguing, some that are not. I just don't know when I hear people's explanation. They're not winning me over to that part of the debate.
I tell you why I don't. And actually, it was a friend of mine on Facebook today who he posted an article. And I know, you know, a lot of times people say if you think positive and you act positive and things will positively go your way. I've had the worst couple of weeks I can imagine, and I've been thinking positive and acting positive. And today, and you want to talk about signs from the universe, today he posts an article that says, and pardon my language here, that there is a I got to find the article here that essentially it's from a guru, from an advice guru saying that thinking positive is absolute, as he put it, quote unquote, bullshit. And that's the article. And it's published from a reputable source. Here it is right here. Zen Master explains why positive thinking is terrible advice.
Well, that's his take on it. I mean, there's a lot of people, including myself, that I've seen when I'm focused more on the positive, good things come and good things happen.
And it's funny because I've been putting all my energy lately into, okay, this is going to go well. This is going to go well. Everything's going to go forward. Everything's going to be good. Everything's going to be good. And it seems like the harder I'm trying, the harder I'm falling.
Maybe
lately.
That's the point, is just stop pushing, you know, it could be in the way you're handling it too. And you're, you know, I'm not going to lose my foot. I'm not going to do this.
Oh, no, it's not.
You know, if you're having that kind of approach,
that might
be what's drawing more negativity towards
you. That's not the way I'm handling it. It's things are going to go great. We're going to have, you know, this is going to be successful. This is going to happen. This is going to come out just fine. And it's boom. It's like opposite day every and it and I'm and I'm you know, you talk about getting frustrated. And so when I see this article today, I start horse laughing because I just I just thought, well, OK, you know, and you talk about your signs from the universe. I just looked at it and laughed. I thought maybe that's my laugh for the day. Not that it's a sign from the universe, but that's my laugh for the day. And sometimes maybe those what you think is a sign from the universe, maybe it's just your opportunity to get a good laugh in for the day. You know?
Could be. Right. Yeah. Looking into that. Listen, we've got a great week. We're lining up for you next week. We want to hear more from you. What type of topics would you like us to cover? What things capture your attention? Aliens, abductions, monsters, Bigfoot, ghosts, the demonic realm, possession, exorcism. You know, what fairies? What do you really like? What would you like to know more about? What about reincarnation? Get us an email, dave@darknessradio.com. And you can copy tim@darknessradio.com. Give us your thoughts and perceptions, because we're always looking for the topics that you find the most fascinating. I know what we like is not always what you like, and we want to make sure that we can cover that. And we've had an interesting week this week, talking about the legacy of conspiracies, talking about secret societies and their place in our world, how they came about and why, talking about, you know, one of the original ghost investigators, Harry Price, and how even a guy who is so good at what he did and was so thorough in his research could easily be tricked and fooled. And then, you know, today with Avia, hearing some of these different stories and in situations. Now, I will say this. She claims that she gets some weird EVP and things over her phone.
Mm-hmm.
As you and I just heard, on both of her phone lines, we had to call her on a second line.
Yeah.
She does not have a great connection.
No.
And there were times I was hearing my own voice bouncing back.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering how many times she thinks she's getting EVP or a spirit voice when all it is whatever crap line she's on has got a weird echo effect.
Yeah, there's a lot of technical issues there on her end. And I would agree with you. I think there's more to be investigated on her technical side than there is maybe right on her ghostly
but
side.
She had some great stories to share. We thank Avia Bell Moon, our guest. And again, her book is called Spiritland, The Ghosts of California's Central Coast. And she gets a lot more concise and precise in her writing. So you can check out that book. And remember, if you buy it through Amazon.com, make sure you use our link, the Killer Deals link over at darknessradio.com. The Killer Deals link. You'll find all of our advertisers there. You'll also find the buttons for Amazon. Use those buttons whenever you purchase anything through Amazon. A small portion goes to help your buddies maintain and keep this show on the air and available for you. And remember, check out audibletrial.com/darkness. That's audibletrial.com/darkness to get that free 30-day trial and a first book to get you started. That's it for tonight's show. Be kind, love one another, and we'll be back with you right here next Monday with Beyond the Darkness.